I didn't want to start the new series of halachos because we're going to have a little choppy couple of weeks, but I thought that this was a good opportunity as we just finished the halachos of Amir Lenachri. I thought it was an opportunity just for us to run through quickly that which we learned and remind ourselves of some of the major principles that we covered. I think it's important because this is a topic that comes up every Shabbos, and it's something that all of us should be very well aware of. So let's just go back to the beginning. The story of Amir Lenachri really starts in a Gemara Masechah Shabbos, where the Gemara tells us, what if there's a fire in someone's home? And to remind ourselves, a fire in someone's home does not mean that that fire is at all going to potentially endanger anyone's life, which is almost impossible in our generation today. Houses are built right next to each other, and it can spread. But the case that the Gemara is describing is that there is no danger, and a Nachri comes along and wants to put the fire out. So the Gemara says, I don't have to discourage him from putting it out on his own. However, the Gemara does say that I'm not allowed to ask him explicitly to put it out. Why? So the Gemara says, because that would be Amir Lenachri. What's the problem with Amir Lenachri? Where does this come from? So this is a very interesting question that is discussed in the Rishonim. Amir Lenachri is clearly only in Isser Derabanan. And Dr. Lerman actually asked a very interesting question, a very important question last week. On the Parsha, he was going through the Parsha very carefully, and Rashi quotes a Mechilta where it says that there's an Isser to do Amir Lenachri on Shabbos. So how can it be that it's learned from a Pasuk? How could it be that it's De'araisa, if after all, we know that Amir Lenachri, the Gemara says clearly, is only De'rabanan. So that's actually an amazing question. And the answer to that is, I believe the Ramban writes on Chumash that the ger that we're talking about there is a ger toshav. That Amir Lenachri De'araisa is only when we're talking about a ger toshav. Obviously, Amir Lenachri to every other Gentile in the world would only be an Isser De'rabanan, and that is the assumption that we are working off of when you have a ger toshav, which is basically impossible today. So that might be a different category. But generally, when we're talking about the Nachrim who are around in our community, that would only be an Isser D'Rabbanan, and that's where it would start, and that's where it would end. So what is the reason why the Chachamim instituted this violation, this prohibition of Amir Lenachri? What's the reason for it? There has to be a good reason to make an institution in D'Rabbanan. They can't just get up one day and make a decision on their own to have some kind of Isser D'Rabbanan in play. So this is actually two different opinions in Rashi. Rashi in one Masechta writes one thing, Rashi in another Masechta writes something else, and the Rambam writes a third reason. So Rashi in Maseches Avodah Zarah says the reason why is because Shabbos is supposed to be totally different from every other day of the week. And on Shabbos we're supposed to eat differently, on Shabbos we're supposed to talk differently, on Shabbos we're supposed to walk differently, and therefore Rashi says that if you're going to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you, that would be a violation of the Dabar Davar, which is the appropriate way for us to talk on Shabbos, and this would be an inappropriate conversation to be having on Shabbos to talk about melacha. That's what Rashi says in one Masechta. Rashi Masechta Shabbos says, no, that's not the reason why we have a problem. The prohibition really was instituted because we have a concern of shlichus. And if you're going to instruct a non-Jew to do the melacha for you, it is as if you did the melacha on your own. And that is the concern, and therefore the Gemara says that we're not allowed to have a non-Jew do the melacha the same way we are not allowed to do it on our own. And the Rambam gives a third reason, and that is because if we're going to have a Nachri doing Malacha for us, then ultimately it's going to come to the point where we're going to do the Malacha on our own, because we're going to be so accustomed to seeing Nachrim doing Malacha in our homes that is ultimately going to lead us to do the Malacha ourselves as well. Would there be a distinction between Rashi A, Rashi B, and the Rambam? What's the difference? Either way, it's an Isser D'Rabbanan. The difference would be, the Stipler has a whole discussion about it, the difference would be, what if I instruct the non-Jew before Shabbos that I want him to do malacha on Shabbos? So would that be permissible or not? Well, let's go through the reasons. If the reason why I'm not allowed to do Amir Lenachri is because v'dabru davar, because I have to speak in a certain way on Shabbos, well, in this situation, I did the talking before Shabbos. Nothing happened on Shabbos itself. If the reason is because of shlichus, then what does it matter when I made the instruction, when I actually verbally told him to do it? The bottom line is, he's my shaliach, and now that he goes ahead and does it on Shabbos, that is something that would be prohibited. So there would be different situations. Or take, for example, what if I instruct the Nachri to do a malacha for me? I talked to him on Shabbos about the malacha, but I say, I want you to do it on Matzei Shabbos. So if the problem is shlichus, So there's no shlichus because the whole melacha is happening after Shabbos, and there's no prohibition of doing melacha after Shabbos. But if the concern is v'dabr davar of how we talk and how we communicate on Shabbos, then that would be a problem, even though the actual melacha itself is only going to happen after Shabbos is over. Now, what happens if a non-Jew actually does the melacha for you on Shabbos? Would I be allowed to derive benefit or not? Once it's already been done. So what's done is done. So what would be the halacha now? So the Gemara Maseches Shabbos, Kuf Chaf Aleph, teaches us that not only are you forbidden to ask a non-Jew to do a melacha for you, but even if the non-Jew goes ahead and does the melacha, you're not allowed to derive any benefit. You cannot get hana from the melacha that was done. Why? And the Rashba explains very famously that the reason why is because we wanted to have some kind of preventative measure. We wanted to have some kind of deterrent. And the way to do that was by making sure that even if the non-Jew ultimately does a melacha for you, you're not going to derive any benefit, and that is going to prevent you from asking him to do it next time, because we know that if we're not going to get benefit from it, then why would I ask him to do it the next time around? So that, says the Rashba, is the reason why we would not allow a person to derive benefit from a malacha that was done by a non-Jew on Shabbos, even if the non-Jew was not even instructed, was not asked to do it. That would be something that would be prohibited. Now, the Shulchan Aruch scales this back a little bit, and the Shulchan Aruch says that there would be a situation where we would allow the Jew to get benefit even if the non-Jew does the malacha on Shabbos. And the Shulchan Aruch says, for example, if you have a non-Jew who does a malacha for himself, for example, he walks into a room and the lights are off, and he wants to do something in that room. He wants to read a book. The only way to read the book is to turn the lights on. So he turns the lights on. Now, just so happens that once he turns the lights on, I'm also going to derive benefit from it. So in that case, says the Shulchan Aruch, I would be allowed to have hana because he's really doing it for himself. And therefore, that would not be any prohibition at all. That is number one. Now, the Shulchan Aruch does say, you have to be careful that we're talking about a situation like turning on a light switch where it's just one set of lights. Once he turns it on, ner le'echad, ner le'meya. Once he turned it on for himself, now 100 people can use it. It's no extra malacha that's necessary. But say, for example, Shulchan Aruch says a case, what if I have a Nachri who cuts the grass in order for his animals to have what to eat? And it turns out that there's extra. So he calls me over and he says, look, I'm not going to give this to my animals because I have too much here. So would you like to bring your animals in and have them graze? Would you like to have them eat from that which I cut from the grass? So the Shulchan Aruch says, you're not allowed to do that. Why? Because then next week, he's going to go specifically with intent and cut it for you. Because he says, what's the big deal? I'm already cutting the grass. I may as well cut a little bit more grass. But that's doing an extra malacha for you. And that's not the same as turning on a light switch. When you turn on a light switch, he's doing one malacha, whether it's for you or whether it's for 100 people, the same malacha is going to happen. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says that that would be a very important detail about this. Are there other situations where a malacha that was performed by a Nachri on Shabbos one would be allowed to get benefit from? So the first exception to the rule that we said is that although the Gemara says you're not allowed to get hana from a malacha v'nachri because we want to have a deterrent in the way to discourage you from asking the Nachri the next time around, the exception to the rule would be if the Nachri is doing it for himself and no extra malacha was necessary, then you'd be allowed to get hana. Another case would be the following. The first story of Amir the Nachri that we have is a Gemara Maseches Shabbos. As we mentioned, the Gemara says that if I have a house that is on fire, and I'm afraid I'm going to lose the whole house, so the Gemara says I'm not allowed to ask the Nachri to do it for me. What if the Nachri goes ahead and does it on his own? So the Gemara says, I don't have to stop him. What do you mean you don't have to stop him? So now the fire's put out, but I can't live in the house. So what good is it? Because the Nachri did a malacha, and now my house is saved. So I'm no better off. I may as well just let the house burn down, because I'm not going to be able to use the house anyway. Isn't that getting hana from a malacha of the Nachri? So the answer is no. You'd be allowed to use the house. But why? Shouldn't that be the same as any other case that is described in the Gemara? And the answer to that is, the Magen Avraham explains, and many other Achronim try to explain, because in that case, I'm not getting a direct benefit from the malacha that was done. When he turns the lights on, I'm getting a direct benefit. When I am living in the house as a result of the fact that he put the fire out and my house did not burn down, that's an indirect benefit, that's an indirect hana, and that is an exception that we would say would allow me to have hana from that which a Nachri did if it's something that I'm not getting a direct benefit from. So an example of that would be, let's say I have somebody who is unable to fall asleep with the lights on, And it just so happens that a Nachri walks into the room and turns the lights off. So would I be allowed to then sleep in the room or not? So what would you say? Yes, why? Because that's an indirect hana from the malacha that was done. I'm not actually getting hana from the fact that the lights are off. I'm now able to go to sleep. There was an obstruction in the way, and now he took that obstruction out of the way. So that is considered an indirect hana, and that would be something that would have been permissible. So again, we have two exceptions so far. Exception number one is if a Nachri does it for himself, not for you. Exception number two is if the Nachri does something that gives me a benefit, but it's an indirect hana, that would be something that I would be allowed to derive benefit from on Shabbos or after Shabbos as well. Question?
I'm just a little confused. Three reasons, the two Rashis in the Rambam were saying, all have to do with the Amira component. Right? Either the Rabbar, or maybe to do it yourself, or...
Shlichus,
or the Rambam, that made to become kal in your eyes.
Right.
But all these cases we're saying is when you're not even instructing, he's doing it, and the question is you're letting it have enough from a situation where you weren't even involved in it.
This is an additional question.
Why should it even be the parsha of Amir La'akum?
Because we're afraid that it's going to lead you next time to do Amir La'akum. So this is a deterrent. You're right. We should say it doesn't follow any of the qualifications of Amir La'akum. You're correct. So it should have been permissible, and that's what the Rashba is bothered by. Why is there an issue? That's the kasha of the Rashba. The Rashba answers, the reason why there's a prohibition to get Hana is because we're concerned that you're going to lead yourself to do Amir La'akum if you see that there's some good direct benefit that you can get from that which he did. But your question is exactly the question that the Rishonim asked. You're very correct. Now, exception number three that we find, when would I be allowed to get Hana from that which was done by a Nachri b'Shabbos? Exception number three is if there is really something that is just considered a Tosefes Hana. So if, let's say, I'm eating in a room and the lights are on, but they're dimmed. So I can see the food, I know where I'm going, I'm not going to trip over the furniture, the food is not going to fall off my plate. But it would be more pleasurable if the lights were on all the way. So the Nachri walks in and he makes the lights brighter. So I would have been able to do everything that I'm doing without him doing that malacha. But now he made it Tosefes Hana. Now he made it a little bit more comfortable. So in a situation like that, the Shulchan Aruch says that there would be no prohibition of getting Hana from the Nachri. However, writes the Shulchan Aruch, let's say I have candles that are lit and I only had one candle and now the Nachri goes ahead and he lights another five. So that's wonderful. That's okay. That's a Tosefes Hana. I'm allowed to derive benefit from the malacha that the Nachri did. But what happens when the first candle goes out? And now the additional five are the only ones that are lit. So in such a case, you have to stop using that light immediately because now you can't just say that's a Tosefes Hana. If the first bulb or the first candle goes out, now I'm only deriving benefit from that which the non-Jew has done. And that would be the exact prohibition that is discussed here in the Gemara. So Tosefes Hana is something that's very subjective. Let's say, for example, the Nachri goes and cooks me a steak. Right? So he makes a barbecue. I guess it's a Bishul Akum issue. But whatever, you get around some of those problems. The Nachri goes and makes something for me that is not subject to Bishul Akum. So what would you say? Well, he cooked something for me. I didn't really need it. That's a Tosefes Hana. I had Shabbos meals. I had everything. I would have been okay without that which he did. So, would you say now that therefore I'm allowed to eat the food that he cooked on Shabbos? Because it's only a Tosefes Hana? Where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? So the Nachri goes and turns the air conditioner on. So would you say, well, I could have lived without the air conditioner, without the heat, it's okay, it's not such a big deal. So now he made it a little bit more comfortable. So Rav Moshe struggles in a tshuva, if you want to look at it, it's number 12, you can look at it later. Rav Moshe in a tshuva tries to figure out, where do we draw the line? When do you say that something is just a Tosefes Hana? I had one candle, I had one light on, it was good enough. Now the Nachri made it a little bit more comfortable, so there's no Isser of getting Hana from that. And where do you say, no, this was something that without the activity that the Nachri did was really an untenable situation, and therefore that is not something that I would be allowed to derive benefit from. Again, an interesting tshuva in Rav Moshe. It's important to really understand where we draw the line, but it's not so simple to really draw the line carefully. It may be a little bit subjective. You have to look in Rav Moshe's tshuva. Now, until this point, we've been talking about situations where you would be allowed to derive benefit from a non-Jew. Exception number one that we said is, if you have a Nachri doing for himself. Exception number two is a situation where he's not really creating something that gives you a direct Hana. Exception number three is a situation where all you're having is a Tosefes Hana from that which was done. Now the Gemara Masechta Shabbos says that you would be allowed to go to a Nachri on Shabbos and say, Shatamu Nimi La'erev, do you think you could stick around tonight? Now, why are you asking him to stick around tonight? What, are you having a party? No, you're not having a party. Obviously, he's a handyman, and you want him to stick around after Shabbos because you want him to be available right after Shabbos is over to fix whatever broke in your house. He's a plumber, and you don't want him to take 10 other jobs right after Shabbos is over. So you happen to bump into him on Shabbos. You say, you mind coming to my house tonight? So he says, why am I coming? I don't know, I want to hang out with you. Now, it's obviously, the reason why you're asking him to come to your house is because he happens to be a plumber, and you want to make sure that he's going to show up tonight. So you invite him on Shabbos itself. So would you be allowed to do that or not? So the Gemara says you're allowed to say to a plumber, Shatamu Nimi La'erev. You're allowed to say to a non-Jewish plumber, please come to my house tonight. Now, why is that permissible? So the Gemara says, because you're only doing a remisa. I'm just hinting to him that I want him to do something. I just said, please come to my house. There could be 1,000 reasons why I want you to come to my house. I'm just not telling you. Now, it just so happens to be, all of us know the reason why you're inviting him to your house is because this is what he does. And the only time he comes to your house during the year is when there's a plumbing issue. So obviously that's why you want him to come. But would I be allowed to do that? The Gemara says yes. Why? So two reasons. Let's go back to the reason for the Isser Amir Lenachri. If it's because of a Dabra Davar, if it's because there's a way that I'm supposed to speak, so I didn't say anything wrong. I'm allowed to go to anyone and invite them on Shabbos to my house. So I'm allowed to go to a non-Jew and say, I'd love for you to come to my house as well. No problem. That's not a violation of a Dabra Davar. If you're talking about Shlichus, I didn't ask him to do anything. I'm asking him to come to my house. Now, after Shabbos, it so happens that I'm going to give him the instructions that I want him to do a malacha. Okay, but that's going to be the instruction after Shabbos. On Shabbos itself, all I did was ask him to come to my house. And therefore, we would assume that that would be something that is permissible. Now, although it's true that the Gemara says that you're allowed to do remiza to a nachri, that you're allowed to hint to him by saying, please come to my house tonight, the Gemara does make a distinction, I'm sorry, the Achronim make a distinction between remez bederach tzivui, and remez shelo bederach tzivui. It depends what kind of hint you give that person. Are you hinting to them and then basically saying exactly what you want without asking? Or are you really giving just a very elusive kind of comment by saying, please come to my house tonight, and you're really leaving it at that? Now, just so happens he can come to your house tonight and drink a beer. He can come to your house tonight and sit down to a dinner. But that is where the Achronim draw a distinction between how exactly I'm going to give him the instruction. If I give him a remiza b'derach tzivui, and I say, can you please hang around in my house tonight because you're so handy, and because I know that your tools do such a wonderful job, that would be remiza b'derach tzivui. That's not remiza. That's asking him outright. And the Chayyadim adds, what if instead of saying anything, I start pointing. I go with my fingers, I go with my hands, and I make all kinds of signals and signs, and he knows exactly what I'm saying, and I know exactly what I'm saying. That's also called remiza b'derach tziva. That's not a remez. That is giving an instruction. That would be something that is prohibited on Shabbos. But if I'm really giving a hint, I'm just giving a remez. For example, like the Gemara says, I am asking a nachri to stay in my house, and I'm not giving anything more than that. I'm just telling him a story. Please come to my house. I'd love to have you. That would be something that is permissible. So for example, if I have an alarm clock that is ringing and I say, you know, it's amazing, the alarm clock is making so much noise, and the Nachri on his own obviously understands that he should go inside and turn it off, that would be permissible. Why? Because that's remiza shelo b'derach tzivui. At no point did I give him any instruction of what I want him to do. I'm just telling him a story. The story is that the alarm clock is ringing. Or if I tell him, you know, my kids are so sensitive, if the light's on in their room, they just can't fall asleep. You know, somebody told me a few weeks ago that they had a Nachri who was a very intelligent person, and they wanted this person to come into their house and turn the lights off in one of the rooms. So they called the Nachri into the house and said, oh, come. And they're saying, you know, the lights are on in the room and the kids are so sensitive to light. So the Nachri walks into the room and he says, do you want me to turn it off? No, I don't want you to turn it off. Okay, so you don't want me to turn it off, so your kids are not going to fall asleep. Yeah, the kids have a very hard time falling asleep with the lights on. So do you want me to turn them off? No, of course I don't want you to turn it off. And they're going back and forth till he says, okay, forget it, you can go home, it's okay. After Shabbos, he explained to him, he's like, I'm sorry, I sound like such a fool. I'm going to explain to you, you know there's a prohibition, we're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do anything, but we're allowed to hint, we're allowed to tell you a story. So he's like, I was telling you the story, I wanted you to understand on your own, but stop asking me if you're allowed to do it, just do it. Do what you have to do. So anyway, it was an interesting story. Not sure how mutter the whole conversation was anyway, because then the next time around, he knows exactly what you're saying. And he knows that by telling him the story, that you're basically giving him a tzivui. So that is actually something that creates a very big problem with a housekeeper, because a housekeeper knows your house inside out, knows your children and their needs inside out, knows exactly what everything needs to be done and when. So this is something that even if I don't give a direct sivui, I don't tell them exactly what to do, they may know on their own just because they're in my house every day and they know what I expect of them. So that is something that is a very, very important question that those who have full-time housekeepers really need to think about. Yeah, question. So we're going to talk about that later, which is, again, as you mentioned, b'chdei sheyasu. So the question that was raised was, what if I ask the plumber, can you stick around till after Shabbos? I don't tell him why. Now he's wandering around my house, and he happens to notice that there's a leak in the bathroom. So he goes ahead on his own and he fixes it. So the Gemara does talk about such a case, and the Gemara says that if a Nachri on his own does a malacha for me, really unprompted, so the Gemara says I have to wait b'chdei sheyasu. So how long would it take after Shabbos for him to do it? An hour. Look how long it took him to do now. So I would have to wait an hour after Shabbos, and then I could derive benefit from that malacha that was done. Now, the Mishnah Berurah quotes a very big chiddush in the name of Rabbi Yair Bachrach, better known as the Tshuvas Chavas Yair. So he was one of the great gedolim in the end of the 1600s, and he writes that if you do amira de amira, if you ask one non-Jew to ask a second non-Jew, that would not be a prohibition of Amir Lenachri. The only time we have a problem of Amir Lenachri is if I'm asking a Nachri directly. But if I'm asking him to ask one of his friends, that wouldn't be a problem at all. Why not? Why should that be the case? So let's go back to the basics. The basics are, why is Amir Lenachri an Isser in the first place? Either because of a Dabra Davar or Shlichus. If it's a Dabra Davar, so over here, what? Over here, it should still be a problem. So, 1 second. Yeah, so I have in my notes here that if you look in the Chabas Yair, he tries to wiggle out of a Dabra Dover why it's not a Dabra Dover. I do remember in the Chabas Yair when I looked it up inside a while ago, I do remember that the Chabas Yair, I think, connects this to a Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara says that when a husband gives a get to his wife, it has to come directly from the husband to his wife. And it has to be something that was instructed, that the husband instructs the sofer to write. So let's say I know a couple that wants to get divorced, and both of them agree that they want to get divorced. But they don't want to discuss it. So I, on my own, am the Good Samaritan, I write the get, and I walk over to the woman, I say, you know, I'm just doing your husband a favor, I'm doing everyone involved a favor, I'm going to give you the get. That doesn't work. It has to be that the husband instructed a sofer to write a get, and then the sofer did it by his instruction. So the Gemara says, what happens if it was Omer Imru? What happens if the husband tells one person, because the husband doesn't know a sofer, so the husband calls the rabbi and he says, can you do me a favor? Can you ask the sofer? You deal with this all the time. You know, can you ask a sofer on my behalf to write the get? So is Omer Imru considered to be a minu shlichus or not? If I have twice removed, is that considered to be setting up a proxy or not? And that's something that the Gemara discusses in the first parak of Maseches Gittin. And from there, the Chavos Yair extends it and he says, oh, this is like Omer Imru. Now, my father always pointed out, one has nothing to do with the other. That's in Hilchos Gittin, Hilchos Shlichos. This is in Amir La'akum. And it's hard to really understand why this would exist. Either way, the Chassam Sefer has a lot of issues with this whole idea of Amir da Amir. The Mishnah Berurah says we should not rely on it unless it's a mafkam, hefsid meruba, hefsid gadol, a major issue, a major problem. But otherwise, we really should not rely on this kula. It's very, very hard to understand, number one, why the Dabra Dover wouldn't apply. That's the Chassam Sefer's objection. And number two, it's not so clear that this whole connection that they make to Hilchos Gittin of Omer Imru is really something that is applicable to Hilchos Shabbos at all. It could be the two things have nothing at all to do with each other. So when would we have a situation when Amir Lenachri would actually be permissible? So one example would be when you have a Chola B'Shabbos. Now, oh, sorry, yes.
So if you get into an elevator and the Nachri asks you what floor
right. No, that would be Amir Lenachri. So you're allowed to go to the floor he's going to, and then you can walk up or down. But you would not be allowed to...
You're not telling him to push the button. Like, how was going to hear the floor?
What do you mean?
He asked what floor.
He asked what floor.
So
Oh, no, that's what we do. That's a tzivui. That's the way we ask people to press the button. We don't say, I mean, if you're polite, you say, can you please press this button? I was in an elevator today in Florida this morning. I was there for a few hours. So I was in the elevator this morning, and somebody came into the elevator and started having a whole conversation with me. She says, you're not from Brooklyn, no way. I said, I'm close to Brooklyn, why? She's like, there's no way. You would talk to me in an elevator? I said, I live in Long Island. She's like, yeah, yeah, people in Long Island talk in elevators. Okay, is that true? I don't know. I think decent people all over the world talk to people who they happen to be with. So, but I think there's a certain etiquette in an elevator that when somebody asks you what floor you're on, I don't think you need to respond, you know, if I beg your pardon, can I please bother you to press number 4? I think you just say 4. Sometimes, right? Depends who's asking, but... Yeah. But that's tivui. That's the way we give an instruction in an elevator. What? Yeah. Of course you can't tell them. That's their job. Their job is to press buttons for you. Yeah. Big problem. Okay. So if you have a person whose life is really... Let me just so I know, because we don't have to do this. Is this helpful to people going over this? Or would people... Or would everybody rather just continue next week and go further in the material?
That's great.
Who's the great?
Jamer.
Hi, okay. So the one who talks loudest, I guess, we listen to. I don't know. If anyone else has an objection, you can tell me and we can go further. I just thought that this would be helpful because Amir Lenachri is a little complicated. And I think it's very, very relevant. So, if you have a chola whose life is actually in danger, a chola sheyesh bo sakana, or, for that matter, if we think his life might be in danger, and we're not sure, I happen not to be a doctor, I don't know how to make an assessment, I don't know how to make an evaluation, and I have to make a decision on my own. There's somebody who just had a baby this Shabbos, and he told me that his wife went into labor early in the morning on Shabbos, and they jumped in the car, they didn't have enough time to get a taxi, whatever it was, they jumped in the car, which is the right thing to do. And that's what he did. And they said they were driving down the block. And he said to his wife, quick, quick, they're going to get out of Hashkama soon. I don't want people to see me. And I said, what are you ashamed of? What are you embarrassed of? What's the big deal? So someone's going to see you in a car. They're going to know. Obviously, the reason why you're in a car is because, first of all, you can't hide that your wife is in her 9th month and in labor. Like, it's, you know, all of your neighbors know that. And even if not, what's there to be ashamed of? Someone's going to say, why was he in a car? You'll have every reason to tell them because we had to take care of Pikuach Nefesh because we had to go to the hospital. That's okay. So anyway... So if you have somebody whose life is really in danger, obviously you do everything. You violate Malachas Daraisa, you don't look for a non-Jew, you do what has to be done immediately. However, we have another category of chola, which is referred to as a chola she'ein bo sakana. A chola whose life is not in danger. So you have somebody who's a chola she'ein bo sakana. Now how do you define a chola she'ein bo sakana? So this is broken down into a number of categories. We have a chola she'ein bo sakana who is mutal mishkav. Chola she'ein bo sakana, who is unable to function normally. So if somebody has a migraine, and as a result of that, they're in bed. They're mutal lemishkav. They're not able to function in a normal way. That would be something that we would allow amir lenachri to be done for that individual. And the Shulchan Aruch writes that when you have a chola she'ein bo sakana that is mutal lemishkav, you'd be allowed to ask a nachri to do a malacha de'araisa for them. So for example, you have somebody who is in bed and pounding migraines and really unwell, someone like that, and they need to take a shower, and turning on the shower involves a malacha d'araisa, a bishul of heating up the water, you'd be allowed to do that. You'd be, not yourself, you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to do even a malacha d'araisa for you, for a chola she'ein bo sakana, who is mutal lemishkav. Now the Shulchan Aruch does add to that, that even those around this individual are allowed to derive benefit from the malacha that was done as well. So for example, if the chola she'ein bo sakana needs the lights on or needs, I don't know, something like that, you'd be allowed to derive benefit even if you're not the chola. As long as there's no concern of shema yarbe b'shvilo. So if let's say he has to cook a pot of soup for the chola, so then we would assume you're not allowed to have some of that soup. Why? because we'd be concerned, oh, if the Nachri knows that the whole family is going to join in the party, he's going to throw in another couple of carrots and another few pieces of chicken, and he's going to make a much bigger soup than he otherwise would have made if it was only for the Chola. So if it's Shema Yarbe B'Shvilo, then it's something that we limit only to the Chola, him or herself, and we would not expand that to others who are in the room. Now the Shulchan Aruch says that when we talk about a category of a chola she'ema sakana who is muta l'mishkav, we have two automatic categories of people that would be included in that. And that is, number one, a young child is considered to be a chola she'ema sakana off the bat. And secondly, a person who is very cold. Hakol cholim etzel tina. If somebody is cold, they are considered to be a chola she'ema sakana. They cannot function normally. And a nachri would be allowed to heat up the wood, turn on the fire, do what has to be done in order to get the person warm. That would not be a problem at all. The problem here is when the Shulchan Aruch says that a child is considered a chol she'ema sakana, until what age are you considered a child? So there are some achronim who say, until the age of bar bas mitzvah. That would be considered the age of a child. And past bar bas mitzvah, then you're not allowed to do amir l'nachri on a melacha d'araisa. My father very adamantly disagrees with that, as does the Chazon Ish. And the Chazon Ish, I should have said the other way, the Chazon Ish disagrees, as does my father. And the Chazon Ish is of the opinion, a child who's considered a chola means a young child. And why is that? Because of a young child, 2-3 years old, you can't reason with them all the time. They don't fully grasp when you explain to them, I'm sorry, I know we ran out of milk and we don't have what you need for your bottle. They're not going to understand that. They're going to sit and scream until they get what they want. Why is that? Because they don't have an appreciation for what you're explaining to them. And in a situation like that, that is where the Shulchan Aruch says that a child is considered to be a chol she'ema sakana, and we'd be allowed to violate amir l'nachri for the sake of that child, even to do a melacha d'araisa. So let's say the kid has a high fever, and we don't think it's really dangerous, but the kid is very uncomfortable and very agitated. You'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to get in the car and drive to the pharmacy to pick up medication that the child would need. Now again, obviously, if the child's life is in danger, so you do what has to be done. But we're talking about where it's not really so dangerous, but still, the child is very uncomfortable. That is considered to be a chola she'ema sakana, where he's muta l'mishkav. The second category of chola she'ema sakana is where we have somebody who's mixas choli. Okay, he has a little headache. He has something, he's a little uncomfortable. So in a situation like that, we would allow a shvus to shvus, which means you can have a non-Jew do a malacha de rabbanan. So for example, the Shulchan Aruch says if you have somebody who has a big headache and or somebody whose throat is really hurting them and they're just, they're not feeling well, so as a result of that, you need to bring a hot cup of coffee from across the road, but there's no Eruv, so you'd be allowed to ask a Nachri to go across the street, even though there's no Eruv, or Rishas Hayachad Rabbanan, it would be no problem at all. That's a Shvus to Shvus. We would allow a double Rabbanan for the sake of a Chol She'ema Sakana, who has a mixas choli. The third category that the Shulchan Aruch mentions is somebody who's a mechush ba'alma. That's nothing. Somebody who has an ingrown toenail and it's not something that they would ever stay home from work for. Somebody who just has a fleeting, a passing headache, something like that, is not considered to be of real concern. And that would be something that we would generally say you would not be allowed to violate Amir l'Nachri for on Shabbos at all. And the person should just try their best to wait it out and see what happens after Shabbos. Question? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're not talking about, you can ask them directly, you don't have to do that for me.
Yes, you can ask them directly. Yeah, so there's a modern day application. Shulchan Aruch says, Hakol cholim etzel tina. Everyone is used to having heat. So if somebody's going to be very cold, they're a chol she'ema sakana. So the modern day achronim say, all of us are used to having air conditioning. So if I'm going to be boiling hot on a Shabbos when it's 85 degrees in the middle of the summer and humid, and the air conditioning goes out, or I forgot to put it on the Shabbos clock, I forgot to turn it on, hakol cholim etzel chom. The same way in the days of the Shulchan Aruch, everybody was considered a chol she'ema sakana when it came to being freezing cold, so too in our generation, everyone's considered to be a chol she'ema sakana when it comes to being boiling hot, because we have an expectation that it's going to be comfortable. So in a situation like that, our assumption is that you would be allowed to ask a nachri to do something for that individual as well, because that would be a chol she'ema sakana that has the status of a muta l'mishkav, even though he's not sick at all. A person can last the rest of Shabbos and won't be sick from this, but still, that would have an honorary status of a chol she'ema sakana. Mirtz Hashem, next week we will continue with the Chazara. Until then, I wish everyone a wonderful week.